You're listening to Spilling Ink.
Welcome to another episode of Spilling Ink, the talk show that takes you behind the book to meet the authors and professionals in the indie publishing industry. We're back with our second episode of 2017. And I've got Jason again as my co-host. How you doing, Jason?
Hi, everybody. I missed you for the last week.
We've got two authors this week to introduce you to. Rachel McClellan, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your books.
I started publishing in 2012. I started out as a young adult author, published a trilogy through a traditional publisher. After that, I started looking more closely at the indie market. I didn't like how the traditional publisher, I didn't have a lot of control on the pricing of my book, covers, distribution, any of that. And it was very, very frustrating to see my books just weren't selling. I just was not competitive, especially in the ebook market. So with the indie books, I did release a young adult title, and it did kind of okay. I was kind of hesitant to do it again, so I gave my publisher another book, which I regret greatly, because shortly after that, I released another series, a new adult series, indie, and it took off. So now I'm trying to figure out how to get my rights back from the traditional publisher so I can actually start doing something with them again. And that's my goal this year, to get myself in a good financial position so I can buy my rights back. So I've got about 11 or 12 titles out. I'm about to release one in February and at least three more after that. I want this to be a good big year and finally figured out marketing this last year, and that makes all the difference.
Yes, and we will be talking about marketing today. That's actually our central topic of the day. But before we do that, we've got another author to introduce you to, and I'm probably going to screw his name up. So bear with me here. Rick Gualtieri? Gualtari? Oh, I knew I'd mess it up.
pretty close. It's Rick Gualtieri. And honestly, from day to day, I like probably change the pronunciation myself because, you know, sometimes there's an inflection and sometimes there's not. And I'm just a lousy Italian. So what are you going to do? But anyway, thanks for having me on here. I have been self-published since really day one. I've been doing this since 2011. And really, I just kind of fell into it. Before that, I had bought my wife a Kindle as a birthday gift. Started noticing that there were these stories on there that like I hadn't seen before from authors I hadn't seen. They were reasonably priced, and I'd always been kind of a closet writer, throughout college and such. And putting out a book was really just a bucket list item for me. So I put one out there. Nobody read it. It wasn't very well edited. It was kind of not so great, but I was really proud. I put it out there, and then I was like, okay, let me actually try to, like, it was about 30,000 words long. So I was like, let me actually try to write a full novel. And so that was about a little more than 5 years ago, 18 novels later, well, not novels, 18 releases later. Here I am right now. I went full time this year. And my goal has been, looking back at those early days, once again, I had no idea what I was doing. You know, it was horribly formatted. It was horribly edited. My goal each year has been to get a little less stupid than I was the year before. So far, it's been doing pretty well. I've gotten lucky. I'm out there in multiple genres, urban fantasy, horror, comedy. I do have a pen name that writes some risque stuff, and I'm really just having a lot of fun with it.
That's the name of the game, man. Do what you love, have some fun, and hopefully pay your bills at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, how about you, Jason? What are you up to lately?
Oh, goodness. Man, you always stick me with hard questions, like, what am I doing? Well, I was attempting to just write full time. Only writing full time is a hard thing, especially if you jump into it before you have a decent amount of income going on. And so I'm really very much a newbie to the whole writing game. And so kind of what I do now is I write in the evenings and my days off. And when I'm not writing, I'm working at a vet clinic here in town, working with animals, and I work at a tattoo shop on the weekends. So I keep myself busy that way. I've also got a house full of kids and pets myself. So I'm always busy with something, but I'm hoping that at some point I will be at the point that Rick Gualamente something. is
it? This is why I purposely sign like everything I do just Rick G.
Rick G.
Yeah.
I like that. So that's where I want to be. So hopefully with this episode here, we're going to be able to teach all of us indie authors out there that are struggling to figure out how to go from just doing what we love to actually doing what we love and getting some income out of it. So that's kind of the goal with tonight's show. So, you know, no pressure with you two, but I expect to be a millionaire by next week. I'm just telling you.
No pressure whatsoever.
If you figure it out, let me know.
Honestly, the market has changed since I started in 2010 with my first book. And since then, every year has gotten a little bit harder to reach new readers. And if you don't change up your game each year, and that being, you know, how you approach things, how you advertise, the type of books you write, you know, the quality, everything has to be better than last year in order to maintain and gain new readers. And lately, and I don't know if you guys have noticed the same thing, it's really become a pay-to-play system. If you're not buying into advertising, you're missing a huge opportunity to reach the readers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And having a marketing budget, I don't know if it's a must, but it definitely does not hurt.
It helps. Yeah.
So now, Rachel, you started out in traditional publishing. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can you tell us who your publisher was, or is that something you'd rather not talk about?
Well, that's fine. It was Cedar Fort Publishing. They're a mid-size publisher out in the West. They were good to work with. Their marketing plan, they gave me a booklet that I was supposed to follow, real basic. And of course, the first thing they have in there is you need to set up a book blog tour, which now looking back, like that was the biggest waste of time, I think, with anything I've ever done. To do these book blog tours, it took a lot of time. I don't know. They never worked for me. Maybe they work for some people, but it was a very simple marketing plan. I don't think at least the publisher I worked with had any real marketing experts that could really teach you how to market your book successfully. But not only that, the way you market your books now, if you're only making 15% on traditional publishing on every book, you're never going to get, your ROI is going to be terrible. So it's just not worth it for me to market my traditionally published books, and I don't.
Okay. And you had four titles traditionally published, is that correct? Or
five, actually. I don't count one of them, but...
Okay.
It was a mother book. It was for like a Mother's Day. Whatever.
Okay. So you had five books traditionally published, and so we only count four, though. And now how many have you done as an indie?
Six of them, seven will be coming out soon.
Okay. So of the five that you've done traditionally and the sixth so far that have been released indie, have you seen better sales than with your indie published works?
All right. We'll put it this way. With the five I did traditionally, I make more in a month on my indie books than I've made for the last 5 years on my traditionally books. Altogether.
Okay. So that's a pretty huge difference. You know, that's a big deal.
And my books were in Barnes, like they were across the country in Barnes and Noble, and like they just move so fast in bookstores. They're on the shelves for a few weeks, and if they're not selling hundreds of copies, they're gone. It's tough to make money in the traditional world.
Okay. And do you attribute that to mostly their marketing plan or just the way the market is? Or what do you think made so much of a difference between going from traditional to indie?
First, my ebook price for being like a no-name author, they had my ebook price at like $6.99, $7.99.
Okay.
No one's going to buy that. So the ebook, yeah. There was very, very few sales. And then traditionally published... It just moves fast. You have the big five publishers that will pick their titles that they really want to push for the year. And they spend a lot of advertising dollars to either rent space in bookstores or, I mean, if you're just kind of a medium-sized publisher that's not going to do any of that, your books get replaced quickly.
Okay. And I think the reason why I keep asking about that is not to kind of beat a dead horse on the traditionally published, but I think that for a lot of young authors and even, you know, a lot of indie authors in general, it's still kind of a dream to be picked up by some kind of publisher, you know, that,
right.
You know, it feels like you've really made it once you get to that point.
Legitimatized if you are traditionally published in your head, that's what you think.
Exactly right. And really, you know, that's all we have to go on, you know, is what we see out there in the world. And so that's kind of why I wanted to explore that a little bit. So that's a pretty huge difference that you're making more in a month than you have in the past 5 years with your books altogether. Yeah. You know, I definitely don't want to be ignoring you, Rick, but I'm going to...
No, kinda... this is all good stuff to hear.
Okay. I want to kind of follow up with Rachel for a couple minutes here.
Sure.
Now, it may be a little boring for you to explain it this way, but for a lot of us, we really don't know where to start, you know, going into marketing our indie novels or our short stories. So where is it that you start? How do you get going and making this work?
With my indie titles, for me, it was finding key people that could actually mentor me, because I knew nothing. I had done traditional publishing, thought I knew it. I had my stupid little booklet they gave me, but it was finding the right people to surround myself with. And I just tried to absorb as much as I could. I belong to a couple of really good author Facebook groups, and that's so key to learn what you need to be doing.
What groups do you think have been the most helpful? If you could just name a couple.
There's the 20 books. Let's see. Make sure I say it right. 20 books to 50K. Yeah, that one's one of the good ones. There's a marketing. Oh, Rebecca Hamilton. She's got one that's really good too.
What about that tips and training for creating marketing ads?
I've never heard of that before.
I'm not going to shoot my own little group. I try to help out. There's so many good authors in there that give such good tips, like beyond what I could. It's a good group too.
It's a very good group. I'm learning a lot. I'm more of a lurker than I probably should be, but I'm constantly trying to absorb anything that's given out there information wise.
And that's the authors that are going to succeed, the ones that are teachable and don't try and put up a fight when they hear advice. They really try to learn.
Okay. And that's another point, too. I mean, I've been in this market since 2010. I'm still feeling like a newbie when it comes to marketing. There's so much to learn. There's so many tactics. There's so many advertising platforms that it's almost like drowning, trying to figure out what's worth doing, what's not working, how to make things work.
But yes. Do you remember the very first episode of Spilling Ink that you had me on? And I think I was on, as a guest?
Yes.
I think I was on as a guest. And David asked me, our other host, what is your marketing plan? And I told you, my plan was that I had no plan. And, you know, I think what I had said at the time was that I really want to focus on writing something great, something that I will love and hopefully other people will love. But when I tried to think too hard about the business side of it, that I would get frustrated and it would always feel like I'm lost, or like Katie just said, drowning. And I really feel like there are a lot of people out there that feel that way, because it can feel so intimidating. And you know, it is really a scary thing going from, okay, I've finally written something and it's actually a good book. You know, it's cool. You know, people are going to love this, but now what the hell am I going to do? You know, and so Rachel, you said you found some good people to kind of mentor under, and you got acquainted with some Facebook groups. You know, what did you do next from there? How did you start to build your brand as an indie?
You know, something interesting you say is it's so overwhelming. That's why it's so important to focus on one thing at a time. If you try and look at the big picture, it will overwhelm you. So whether it's focusing darkness.
Jason didn't pay his power bill again.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Anyway, whether it's focusing just on Facebook ads or starting something simpler with like the ad stacks. You know, setting up a free Booksy or with a new release, just setting up the promos that really don't take a lot of effort. You just set them up. Just start with one thing at a time so you don't get overwhelmed. The newsletter slowly grows your newsletter, whether it's Twitter followers, Next, or Facebook followers. But one thing at a time, because it's just a lot.
I would say probably the number one thing to acknowledge is start at the bottom, because that's where you're at. One thing that blows my mind on like keyboards and stuff is like, you know, have somebody come out there and be like, you know, hey, you know, I just put a book out there. It's the first thing I've ever done. You know, where are my millions? And it's like, I know this is like a traditional publishing, like, you know, you got to earn it, but in some way, but with social media, all of this stuff, you do kind of have to earn it. That was my thing 5 years ago. I started off with zero Twitter followers, no Facebook page and stuff. And I just kind of had fun with it, you know, just talking, very little book promotion, you know, a little bit here and there, but like mostly just being myself, having fun, trying to have a focus on humor. I mean, fortunately I kind of write in the humor genre. So, you know, that kind of goes hand in hand. But like growing it little by little. And one thing is I follow, there's a couple of authors out there, you know, I do follow their pages and stuff, you know, but I mostly follow them because they're interesting people. I don't follow a whole lot of author pages and such. And I try to limit like the groups I'm in, because after a while it can be kind of like white noise. And I think part of it is, you know, I like to get ideas from these places, and sometimes like find out things I'm doing incorrectly, but everything I'm doing with regards to marketing is all about kind of finding my own voice and making, like, you know, I guess figuring out and making, finding what works for me. And I think some of that is kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the old Bugs Bunny cartoons where, like, you know, where they can walk on air until like somebody hands them like a book on gravity and then suddenly they fall. So it's kind of one of those, until such time as I know what I'm doing is completely idiotic and it's working, well then I'm good with that.
Okay. Now you're saying you start out small and you know you're building it slowly. How do we go about starting out slowly? You know, what do you suggest? You know, say we're focusing on Facebook, since that's something that just about everybody is on. Not everybody's on Twitter, but you know, how do you go about starting to slowly build that following? Either one of you guys.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing for the first, I guess like 2.5 years that I had a Facebook page, the only place I was advertising it, the only place you could find it was in the back of my books. So I didn't want to do like, you know, link parties, like, you know, that they had on keyboards sometimes. You know, hey, like my page. My whole goal with my Facebook page was, I'm growing it slow, but I want to make sure that if you're there, it's because you want to be there. You know, and that's why for the longest time, it was just, you could only find it at the back of my books. So that told me when somebody clicked the like on my page, there was a good chance that they'd actually read my stuff. And I probably just lucked into it, but you know, early on, it kind of became obvious that like that on Facebook, it wasn't so much numbers as it was engagement. Yeah. So 100 real readers who are going to talk to you are infinitely more valuable than 10,000 empty likes that are never coming back. And Facebook acknowledges this. That's why like you see a lot of, you go out there and you see a lot of things along the lines of, I have zero engagement. I put out a post and like, you know, of the 5,000 people on there, it says 1% of them saw it. It's like, well, that's probably because those aren't real people, or they're not engaged in a way, or maybe you're doing something wrong where they're not coming back. I would say what probably helped me the most was that for a year and a half, maybe 2 years, nobody was buying my books for anything. And when you're not selling anything, the pressure is off because you're kind of free to experiment and kind of find that voice. And I'm not saying like everybody should be like, you know, hey, let me do this and like not sell anything for a year. But that's kind of what worked for me, was, you know, the whole, okay, I'm just having fun. I'm just putting out books and I'm playing on social media for like the 30 readers I have. And it was all like, you know, all good, you know, and I guess that kind of helped me learn what I was doing.
Okay.
Now that brings up a really good point there, the engagement. Back before Facebook changed the way engagement worked and page likes and page views worked, I used to do a quote of the day or question of the day or a would you rather.
Oh,
you
know, my God, those drive me batshit. would you rather be stabbed in the ass by a unicorn or mauled by a bear?
What? Well, no.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
But it worked, though. It gained engagement, and the more engagement that I got from those, the more people saw the random, hey, I've got a sale, or I've got a new release, or whatever marketing post that I would do during the week as well. And now, unfortunately, Facebook has made it where you have to pay for people to see a lot of your posts, especially if you have a page, a professional page versus a personal page.
Actually, here's a trick that I've been working on, and I can't take credit for this. I got this idea from a few others. Actually, Frankie Love, she's really big in the romance space. I think she was the one who kind of gave me the idea. But it's been working really well. Is I have my Facebook page, and you know, there's engagement goes up and down and stuff. But I also have a Facebook group. And the difference between a group and a page there is a page, I like your page, I might never see your updates. If I'm in a group, unless I specifically turn off the notifications, I'm seeing what's being posted there. So, you know, I have like almost 4,000 people on my Facebook page. That's awesome. I have about 400 people in that Facebook group. But that Facebook group is incredibly engaged.
That's what I do too, yeah.
So you have a Facebook group that is your author group. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's basically just called Rick Gualtieri Books.
Okay, interesting. And so you'll still do your kind of what you do for your everyday engagements. Only you're doing it in the group as well, or does the group get kind of special treatment, or what goes on?
You know something. I try to limit my Facebook page posts for the couple pages I have to like one a day, because I don't want to like, you know, overwhelm people with like white noise and such. But in the group, I'm a little more active. So I'll post something on the page, I'll share that to the group. But then the group, the rest of the day is like, you know, okay, if there's something interesting going on, I'll share it. They're free to post things that are of interest to them. You know, so I try to not make it all about me. The main thing is like, you know, okay, you know, let's have fun with this. So I won't say that they get preferential treatment, but I do post more there because, you know, just the nature of the group versus the page. It's a little more, I think a little more dynamic that way.
Okay. And Rachel, you do the same thing? You have a group as well?
I do. It's more of just a group focused on vampires, because that's what my popular series is on. So we just discuss vampires, my books sometimes, and it's way better than my author page. And I'm lucky if I post it once a week. It's just not a lot going on there because I'm not going to boost a post or, yeah, the group's way better.
Okay.
Let's talk about boosted posts though for a minute here, because that's kind of that's an annoying thing for me. The fact that your posts don't reach the wide audience unless you pay for it. And even then it's like an advertisement. It's only going to reach so many within certain limits. Do you guys use boosted posts at all, or do you just go straight to advertising?
Straight for ads.
I do boosted posts once in a blue moon if I have a big post to make. Like, for example, if I am announcing to the page that, hey, this a new book is out,
right,
I'll boost that, but I won't boost past the audience. I'll do like maybe a $50 or $100 boost to say, reach the people on this page. Because boosts by themselves, they're not nearly as like, you know, they're not nearly as robust or useful as advertising. But in a case like that where I want people to just be aware, that in that case, it usually winds up being worth it.
You both have said, you know, I rather go straight to ads. Now, you know, we want to really kind of go step by step on this for people. When you're talking about going straight to ads, are you talking about going straight to Facebook ads or other types of ads? What kind of ads are we talking about here?
Facebook ads.
Facebook right ads. Now, yeah. So to me, boosting a post is still paying for advertising. So I think that, you know, that some people might be a little, you know, including myself, a little confused by that. So you're actually creating ads that, you know, pop up on people's feeds?
Yeah, the difference there is when you boost a post, it's no different than any other post that you create on your timeline. So maybe you have an image there, maybe you have a video, maybe you have some text. When you create an ad, there are specific elements you're filling in. One, I think Facebook probably gives better preference to ads over boosted posts. That's just anecdotal. But I think you have a much more rigid structure to follow. But since it's that rigid structure, I think it winds up being more effective that way, if that makes any sense.
Can you give me an example of the structure you're talking about? Is it content structure or is it just?
It's kind of a content structure. So like your typical image ad has an image that is supposed to be a certain size, like 1200 by 628, I think. You have a headline, which is going to get a little bigger font than everything else, a link, and then you kind of have a top, like a main blurb, which essentially is kind of like above the ad, and then you can have like a little sub blurb beneath the ad. So you kind of have different content boxes, and if you play around with those enough, you can kind of figure out like what people on what, like, you know, I guess mediums, you know, mobile or like, you know, or desktop, what parts of that ad they're going to see that's going to be optimized for them. And as I said, it kind of gives you a little more rigid structure that helps, because everybody is kind of using that structure. So when people see that ad, I think they're kind of, their brain is kind of trained that, okay, ad, I click here, this happens, I click here, that happens. Whereas in a boosted post, if I boost a post and then I stupidly forget to put my link in, well, I'm kind of effed, you know?
Just for an example here, if you guys want to take a look, I've got one of my current ads that I'm running right now. And that's the full advertisement. It's got the headline up at the top.
Yep.
It's got the subtext there as well as the link. And it's got that call to action button.
Okay, so now what does this ad accomplish? When you click on that ad, where does it bring you?
That ad will bring people straight to, I believe that one links to Books to Read. So that's one of my links that takes you to another landing page where all of my links to buy it at any channel are listed.
Okay, okay. Now, when you're doing an ad like that, how much are you spending on something like that?
I started the newbie phage. Facebook requires $5 a day.
That's only if you're doing clicks. If you do impressions, you can go down to $2 a day. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you could do that.
But it's worth more to pay for clicks than impressions, right?
I think so.
Facebook keeps changing the rules. If you go back about a year ago, impressions were a much better deal. But these days, with so many more people advertising on Facebook and the added competition, clicks winds up being a better deal, I'd say.
Yeah.
So what is right the now. Difference between a click and impression, and why do we want one versus the other?
Okay. Well, when you're paying for impressions, you're paying per 1,000 impressions. So for example, maybe 30,000 people see your ad, and you're paying for those 30,000 people to see your ad. And maybe none of them click, maybe 1,000 of them click. That's kind of you do get a CPC, but you're paying regardless. In kind of a click-based ad, you're paying when people click. So that's kind of really the difference. It's basically a CPM model versus a CPC model.
Now, when you're creating your ads for, Rachel, we'll kind of go to you on this. What type of promotions or what kind of things will you say, okay, I need to create an ad for this? You know, what warrants an ad?
I have the first book in my series. I have ads constantly going for that and have for months now.
Is that a free promotion or is that a sale price or is it just you're always pushing that particular book?
I had the first of my series for 99 cents for a while. It's at $2.99 now. I didn't notice the difference. I'm kind of kicking myself that I didn't go to $2.99 a lot sooner.
Okay.
But yeah, the first book in a series on my solo titles, I don't think I would do Facebook ads. I don't think they'd be near as profitable. So first book in a series, I highly recommend Facebook ads. And I recommend, this is tough for a lot of people, the $5 a day if you go that route, I don't think you get as big as... the sales aren't going to be as good and you might get frustrated because you're not seeing the results as much. I think you got to spend a lot more to really notice the difference. What do you think, Rick?
You always want to test an ad at a low spend.
Oh, absolutely.
But then slowly raise it up. I mean, I think at my best, I mean, I've had a couple ads that were like, you know, at a $50 a day spend or so. And the thing with Facebook ads is they have a very limited lifespan. So it's not a set it and forget it. You don't say, okay, I'm going to spend $50 a day and get that many sales for the rest of my life. There's usually like maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks or so before an ad kind of like runs its course, depending on the audience size. But I mean, what I've had success with is I have a box set that is the first four books in my series. It's first four books of the series for $6.99. You know, I've tested a lot of prices. That seems to be the sweet spot. So that gives me an auto sale headline. You know, hey, you know, get four books for like 50 or 60% off the cover price. And the good thing there is, if I can get them into those first four books, there's a good chance they're going to buy the rest of them in the series. Because at that point, they're kind of invested. If they like, you know, buying the first book of the series, I have tested that out on Facebook, but the box set works much better on Facebook for me.
I'm actually testing one of those right now on my Chronicles series. I have two trilogies, and I'm using an Amazon ad right now for the first trilogy to see if it helps boost sales of the rest of the books as well.
Yeah, I would say Amazon ads are a different animal. Amazon ads, I think you can have much better success with like first in a series or individual books. But Facebook seems to be, you know, the people are looking for that bargain, that headline that basically says, hey, this is interesting, but also, what are you going to give me?
Okay. So now you're mentioning rather large per day numbers, you know, Rick, you know, $50 per day, you know, especially for someone who's just getting into that, that's quite a bit of money to invest. Now, you know, I of course don't expect you guys to reveal your personal financial information, but you know, people, you know, if you're talking about, you know, telling somebody, okay, well, you're going to spend $350 a week on something, you know, what kind of sales numbers, you know, do you guys see in response to that? Now you're already a little bit more established than somebody like me, but you know, say I decide, okay, well, you know, I gotta get off my ass and start doing this. I'm gonna spend, you know, $25 a day on Facebook advertising. Is that something where you're gonna start seeing sales right away, or is it more about getting people to notice you more? You know, how does that work? What does it do for you?
If you have a good ad and good ad copy and you're spending the $25 a day or whatever, you will see good sales. And again, your Amazon landing page has to look good. There are things that you need to do to make it successful. Your cover has to be good. Your first few pages have to be good. If all of that turns out good, you're going to make sales. But if you're spending $25 a day and you're not getting sales, then something's wrong with the cover, the landing page. Something's off.
Now, what is the landing page? Are you talking about your author profile on Amazon? Is that what you're referring to?
Just where they go to buy your books. When they click that learn more or wherever they go from there, which for me, it's straight to my Amazon book page that I'm advertising. Okay.
Like I would say, consider when you're first starting off with a marketing budget, consider that marketing budget no different than if you go to going down to Atlantic City for the weekend or so. You don't want to spend more than you can afford. So when you're first starting off with marketing, like after you've been doing it for a while, you kind of start to make a science out of it. But when you're first starting off, assume you're going to lose that money. So don't spend more than you can afford, because that's never a good place to put yourself in. So one, decide how much you're going to spend. And then you really want to decide, okay, do I want to do it all in one blast, like a book bub or Robin's Reads or so, where it's like, okay, one day, or do I want to do kind of a pay-per-click type where I'm spreading that amount out over time? That's another decision you have to make. And both of them have their, like, you know, have their ups and downs. You know, obviously the, like, you know, the up of, like, you know, say a book bub is, hey, you can be up in the top 100 of Amazon. You know, you drop quickly, but that's like, you know, a good way to, like, you know, have a huge push. But the downside is if it doesn't work, well, you're not really getting another chance. Whereas a $5 a day Amazon ad or Facebook ad, it might take you a while. You have a chance to tweak that. You know, you play around with it. It might be a slow growth, but you know, the downside is you're not going to get that huge bang for that buck immediately. You're not going to see your book shoot into, like, you know, the stratosphere right away at a low spend. But the upside is, you're spending that slowly. You're learning stuff, hopefully, if you're paying attention. You're optimizing it. And eventually, you're reaching that point where the ad is viable, where you can put more money into it, where you're having a positive ROI. And positive ROI is good because it's a business. You're bringing in more money than you're spending. So that hopefully gives you more money to put into that marketing budget to play with for, well, next month or 2 months down when Amazon pays you.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, for the people out there who don't know the terminology, ROI is
return on investment. Basically, I spent this amount much. How much did I earn back? And you always want to earn more than you spend.
Okay. Exactly. Now, Katie, you said you're doing you're at the newbie level of ads. Does that mean you're spending? Are you doing one of the $5 a day kind of thing, or what are you spending on that?
Right now, I'm testing some ads out, and I've actually been talking with Rachel and both Rick and learning from the group's different methods. I've been posting some ads for critique and things like that. I've got two ads running on Facebook right now at $5 a day that I'm testing, and I've got four ads running at Amazon right now that I'm testing at $5 a day. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm spending $5 a day, some ads are for some reason not even breaking $2 a day because they're not getting enough clicks. So it's a test, but I do have a limit of what I'm willing to spend right now while I'm learning the process.
Now, how long have you been running these ads?
For a little over 2 weeks right now.
Okay. Have you seen any difference in your sales numbers at all so far?
I have. And part of it, one of the ads that I'm running actually links to a pre-order I've got going right now for my new book. And I've seen double the number of pre-orders that I've ever seen in a pre-release.
Excellent.
So I know it's having an effect. And the book that goes before it in the series is also increased in sales.
Okay. And you're spending, you know, you're doing your $5 a day, but, you know, on half a dozen different ads. So you're not, you know, so you're spending a little bit more than $5 a day, but it's kind of spread out through different things. And I wanted to ask you two guys, since you're kind of our experts on the subject, what is it that you would suggest to someone who's going to try an ad for the first time, you know, with no bullshit, you know, what would you say, you know, try spending this much per day? What realistically do you think is a good starting point? You know, do you want to start at the bottom, or is there a number that you found that, okay, well, this is something that actually makes it worth it? Like, sure. I know there's not a magic, something magic, you know, that you can tell us that's going to work, but, you know, what's realistic for you guys? You know, what would you go into it saying, I want to spend this?
If you knew you had an ad that was good, had good ad copy, had a good image, because that takes a while just to find in and of itself. I mean, it takes a while to find that right ad. But once you do, I mean, if you can afford, that's hard to answer.
I mean, that's why I asked it.
Rick, go for it.
Well, here's the thing. Right now I have an ad budget of maybe about $2,000 a month. But that's flexible in that if I find an ad that's working and also scalable, well, technically speaking, there's really no limit to what I'm going to try to put in there. I mean, obviously there is a limit, but I'm not going to, like, you know, purposely, like, cut myself off if I find that it's scalable and I'm going up.
What does scalable mean to you?
Scalable means, you know, if you start at a certain level and it's working, if you put more money into it, does it keep working at the same level? So, for example, Facebook. I have a $2 a day ad, you know, I'm spending $2 a day. I'm making $5 a day. If I spend $5 a day, will I make $11 or $12 a day? And so on and so on. That's what scalable means. Okay. It means, can I keep putting more into it and keep getting the same results?
Okay. So I was going to say,
I mean, you were saying, what's a good number? You always want to start at the bottom. Even somebody who's been advertising forever, you always want to start something new at the bottom and move it upward. Because you don't want to, marketing, as I said, is a bit of a science. You don't want to purposely flush money down the drain. You know, I lose 10 bucks, who cares? You know, I lose $1,000, I'm going to be a little annoyed.
Okay, so now for anyone who's watching this, they probably just heard $2,000 a month advertising budget and just about crapped their pants. Because most of us young indies aren't even close to that kind of expenditure on advertising. So my question for you, and it may seem like a silly question, is, but you're investing $2,000 a month into your advertising, and are you getting enough of a return that that's definitely worth it to do? I mean, are you exceeding that?
And you know something? I shared it on Kboard, so I will share here, but I had roughly a little more than $250,000 in revenue this year. Okay. So, yeah. Truth of the matter is, you know, is that sustainable? I'm trying to figure that out. But I'll also say that, as I said, I've been doing this for 5 years, and I started off in the same place. For a year and a half, well, I had by the point I had 5 books out there, I was still selling, if I was lucky, 30 books a month. And I had no advertising budget, so to speak. It was all, like, you know, word of mouth, Twitter, social media, all that stuff. So everybody's, well, that's why I mentioned start at the bottom. You're starting at the bottom, but you gradually build up. You know, I didn't go from zero to a $2,000 budget. You know, I went from zero to maybe saying, okay, I have $100 I can afford to lose here. Let's see what happens, you know, and so on and so on. You know, once again, it's a business. So the whole idea with a business is you grow it and you reinvest, you know, and so on and so on.
And saying, tailing off a little bit of what he said there, and you talking about what to spend on a first-time ad, if you're spending that $5 a day, you should be seeing some sales from it. It's going to grow, and then that will motivate you. Okay, if I throw in a few more extra dollars, you should still see some growth there. If you don't, you start a new ad. So it is a business. You're trying to figure out what works and what will get you your money back.
And I'll also add on to that, grow slowly. Yes. You don't take a $2 ad and then throw and then suddenly say, okay, now I'm going to throw $20 a day into it. You want to bump it up. Like, you know, maybe today it's $2. Maybe in 2 days it'll be $4. Like I've never bumped up an ad like every day. I usually like, you know, we'll bump it up, wait 2 days to see if it settles, then maybe bump it up again, but always by small increments. And over time you build up from that $2 a day to maybe that $50 a day. You don't just like dive in and like, you know, and once again, just set fire to a pile of cash, at least hopefully not.
Now let me ask this so that we can kind of delve into it a little deeper. What qualifies as a good ad? What key elements are we looking for to, besides just sales, to say that, yes, this ad is having an effect on people? Is it the impressions? Is it the clicks? Is it the rate between clicks and sales? What are we looking for as our indicators before we add and increase our budget?
And also, are either one of you looking to adopt a 36-year-old pudgy white man from Michigan?
If you mow my lawn, we can talk.
That's the one thing I can do.
For me, the success on an ad, if the cost per click is down, I don't ever take anything over 20 cents. Most of mine are under 15 cents. I start playing with targets when they get between 15 and 18 cents.
What does that mean? What are you talking about there?
You're talking
about 20 cents per click?
So on Facebook, every time someone clicks that learn now or download button and goes to Amazon, that costs me money. So if the ad's not doing too well, it's going to be higher. If my targets are off, if my image is off or my ad copy's off, that cost per click is going to be expensive. Once you're dialed in, and usually when you start an ad, it takes a few days for it to settle. It always starts out high, and you see that 60 cents per click, and you panic, and you want to stop the ad. But you have to wait just a few days, let it settle, and most of the time, if you've got a decent ad, that price will drop and keep dropping until it settles in, between 10 and 15 cents if you've got the right ad.
Now why does it drop down like that?
I'm trying to figure out how to get down to that below 20 cents. On Facebook, I can't seem to break that. On Amazon, I'm sitting right between 12 and 14 cents.
That's good. I Amazon shoot me in the face. I cannot figure those ads out for the life of me. I've got 10 running right now. Cannot figure it out. Facebook, well, I can.
You know something? I would say the causality between Facebook ads and whether or not an ad is performing versus your cost per click, that's a pretty solid number. Like, I've had a couple ads that have been positive ROI that maybe have been in the high 20s or 30s. But once you get past that, if you're spending, say, 40 cents a click, 60 cents a click, chances are that ad is really not converting. It's 100% different at Amazon, because Amazon is kind of, I'll say they have their own secret sauce for what they're determining is a CPC number. And they're the ones determining that. So it has less to do with the effectiveness of your ad and more to do with what Amazon has decided to charge you. So it's quite possible you might pick, say Bella Forrest, who like pretty much has like a million books out there and just owns the vampire, like, you know, romance genre. There's a good chance you're going to be paying like $1.50 or more for, like, you know, for each click for her name, because everybody else is bidding on it. But that probably has nothing to do with how effective your ad is. Amazon is going to be all about that ROI, that ACOS. There's a column called ACOS, average cost of sale. That's essentially your ROI column. And it's a percentage, and you want that percentage ideally to be below 70%, because you're making essentially 70% of off each sale. So that's probably why Rachel is, because it works differently between the two.
Well, and Amazon also takes a week or more to give you that ACOS number.
Yes.
which is unnerving.
Yeah, like Facebook, as Rachel said, you know, you want to give it a couple days. Amazon, you really can't run an ad for less than a week and have any clue what it's doing. You know, it's in fact, I've done it before where I've run an ad, said, oh, this is a loser, turn it off. And then like 2 days later, suddenly sales show up. And I'm like, wait, it's been a winner all along. On, you know, Amazon, let me tell you, I love their sponsored ads. I think it's a great, promising platform. But if I had hair left, I would probably have ripped it all out by now dealing with it.
Now, where do
Amazon? Oh, sorry, go ahead, Jason.
I was just going to ask you. Now, where do these Amazon ads show up? You know, how do those get to your potential readers?
Well, the Amazon ads, they show up on the product page, I believe.
Yes and no. It depends what type. Amazon has two ads: product display and sponsored. The sponsored show up on product pages, but they also show up in searches. The product display ads, they can show up on the product page, they can show up on somebody's Kindle. There's different places they can show up. It's, you know, I won't say it's a crapshoot because, like, you know, well, it's a bit of a crapshoot with the product display ads, but with the sponsored ads, you can actually test out where they're showing up to a degree. And you do that by bidding on terms, keywords, going into Amazon, searching for those keywords and seeing, well, where you show up compared to other authors and such. You know, so that's kind of almost a real-time way, I won't say to cheat, but a real-time way to, like, you know, figure out, okay, where am I showing up compared to where everybody else is?
Okay, and I don't want to beat on this too much because other people might be a lot more knowledgeable than I am, but, you know, you guys are, you're talking a lot about, you know, getting your cost per click down and some other acronyms that I'm not really following all that well. So now are these all statistics that you are seeing in some kind of readout from Amazon or this is looking at book sales? This is something, you know, some kind of analytics that Amazon is giving you?
It's kind of both because there's direct ROI, which is essentially you're measuring it straight from, say, in your ad dashboard, if you will. Mm-hmm. But then there's what's known as indirect ROI, which is, for example, if I'm sending everybody to the first of my series, well, I have to kind of, like, you know, kind of make a bit of a guesstimate how many of those people go on to read the rest of the series. So that's what you would call indirect ROI. You kind of have to figure that out, looking at Amazon sales, looking at trends, looking at, like, you know, all that stuff, doing a little wizardry with your math, all of that stuff. Whereas direct ROI, Amazon will kind of tell you, okay, you're advertising this book, and this is how many sales you've made of this book.
Okay. Well, and you had just mentioned a minute ago that you were, gosh, and I wish I could remember exactly how you phrased it, but you were trying to see how you were doing in comparison to other authors. How is it that you're seeing that? Where are you looking to make those kind of comparisons?
Well, with Amazon sponsored ads, you're bidding on keywords. So some of those keywords might be, you know, generic, like urban fantasy. Some of them might be the name of a series, you know, the Devil series, maybe. And some of them might be an author name. So, for example, not to pick on you, Rachel, but say I bid on Rachel's name. And I say, I want to spend maximum of 20 cents per click.
No, come on, you can bid higher than that.
I'm starting conservative.
So wait.
Yeah, I have Rachel's name as one of my keywords, too.
Before you finish your statement there, so in your ads, you're targeting people with these particular keywords, that's correct?
Yes.
But you have to place a certain bid to try to get seen with those keywords?
Yes.
Okay.
And
okay.
Your bid is in competition with everybody else.
Okay. Okay. Cool. I just want to make sure that was clear.
It doesn't necessarily mean it'll be 25 cents. You might pay 9 cents if that's the winning bid.
Exactly.
Okay. So we're bidding 20 cents on Rachel's name here.
Now, I'll probably give it a couple days to like filter through because Amazon systems are not instantaneous. But then I might go to Rachel's page or one of her book pages and look at that bar underneath also bots that says sponsored authors and see if I'm showing up anywhere. If I'm not showing up anywhere, that's an issue. You know, possibly Amazon's not finding it a good match. Possibly I'm bidding too low. But if I am showing up on that page or on the next page or the next page. I think Amazon will go at least like three deep with sponsored ads. That'll kind of tell me where my bid is compared to everybody else. And if I think Rachel's books are a really good match with for mine, then that might tell me, let me raise my bid so that I am the first, second, or third person there that people see under sponsored ads, because I think I'm a really good match for her books.
No, and sponsored ads are, is that in the same area as the, you know, people who also, or people also read this and enjoyed this?
It's typically on at least a desktop browser screen, it's typically right below that.
Okay. Interesting.
Of course, Amazon is always changing it for them. So by the time this podcast goes live, who knows where it'll be?
I'm actually looking for an Amazon screenshot that I can show you guys to.
Okay. Well, while you're looking for that, I wanna move over to Rachel here real quick. It sounds like that you, at least to me, it sounds like you enjoy the Facebook ads more than the Amazon ads. Rachel, is that true?
I do. The delayed reporting in Amazon ads drives me crazy.
Okay. Can you give us a little? It's going to be difficult without visual aids, but a little verbal quick tutorial on what does it take to make a good ad? You know, what makes a good ad for you?
For me, the image is so key. The image has to be good. The image, it has to make you feel something. So when readers look at it, there has to be some kind of a connection. I think that's one reason why a lot of times with Facebook ads, you'll see eyes I've noticed tend to do well, especially with the paranormal genre. The image is so important.
And you're not necessarily doing your book covers. You're doing something that, you know, has the same feel as your genre, right?
Right. Okay. So okay. I've spent hours searching for perfect images. And then once I've narrowed it down to 5 to 10, I'll ask a close group that I have which one strikes them, which then makes them feel something. And then I'll focus on maybe 3 different images and I'll test those on Facebook and using the same ad copy on each one. And whichever one starts responding well, then I'll focus on that. And then I've tried using the same image and using different ad copy to see how users respond to that. So there's a lot of testing involved.
Okay. Now, can I ask you, I'll put you on the spot here, and can you give me an off the cuff, just, you know, kind of headline for an ad on something that you might put as a headline?
Vampire fans love this new series. Or
okay.
Just something like that would be the headline.
Something really direct.
Yeah. And on one of my ads that I've been running for several months, it's just my blurb on top. My blurb straight off of Amazon. I use that, have a nice headline, an endorsement at the bottom, pretty basic.
Okay. So you've got your picture, which you spend hours agonizing over getting the perfect one. Yeah. And then you've got a really direct and to the point headline. And then you're actually putting your book blurb or your author blurb right under that.
The book blurb goes above it, then the image, then the headline. And underneath that, I have an endorsement from another author or something that sounds like I'm cool or something.
Okay. And when you click on that, that's usually bringing you directly to the book's Amazon page.
Yep. Goes right to Amazon so they can buy it. And I always make sure my Amazon landing page looks really good. Cover looks good. So you don't want to lose people right there. You might have an amazing ad, but if they're getting lost on your Amazon page, then that's a problem. You're spending money you shouldn't be.
Now, how is it that you can change what your landing page looks like on Amazon?
Amazon lets you in Author Central. Their program they have, they'll let you change your blurb. You can change all the content on there.
Okay. So you can kind of spruce it up from there. Is there a lot of versatility or?
Absolutely.
Okay. Fantastic.
Did you want to see a screenshot of what the ads look like?
Yes.
Okay. Let me share my screen right now so you can get an idea of what we were talking about. Okay. So I'm looking at Rick's book right now and you can see up at the top there. It's got his series. It's got Customers Also Bought. There's a sponsored ad over here on the side.
That's and a product display. That,
there's also the sponsored products as well.
Hey, look, there
if
I
you
am.
Notice. There you see Rachel's book in there as well.
Where? Nice.
So that's essentially what you're paying for is either of these advertising spots.
Okay, awesome.
And the difference there is the higher one is the product is a product display ad. The books are sponsored ads.
Okay, which works better?
No question, sponsored ads works a lot better.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now I just kind of put Rachel on the spot with Facebook ads, but since you seem to be very comfortable with the Amazon ads, can you give us a brief little, this is how I build my Amazon ad?
Sure. You have a lot less leeway with building an Amazon ad. You typically get a headline, whatever book you're going to choose, and maybe I think it was like 50, maybe 75 characters worth of stuff. I think you have a lot more room to play with on the Facebook ads. And also the nice thing about Facebook ads is you can go there after the fact and modify them. Whereas once your blurb and all that is set on Amazon, if you want to change it, you have to create a new ad. So typically what I'll do is I'll try to come up. I will have multiple ads going with multiple headlines. I think one I'm testing right now is like, hey, it's a new breed of vampire or something. And as far as what I put in there, I usually just put a snippet from my blurb, you know, something that I think is like, you know, catchy. I've seen other people like, you know, go in there and be like more descriptive, just kind of like almost kind of give a brief summary of the book. I usually just like to put like a snippet of the blurb, you know. I won't say my blurbs are great, but they've been working pretty well for me.
Excellent.
Yeah. Facebook, your ads are going to be much more robust and you have much more room to like come up with something that is you. Whereas Amazon is much more, you know, they want everybody to look kind of the same.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, after chatting with you guys and after watching this show, you know, our authors are going to be feeling energized about moving and doing this because, you know, we haven't talked to you about your income, Rachel, but, you know, judging by your awesome fancy hair and everything, you must be a gazillionaire. And, you know, just like Rick, who actually lost his hair because he made so much money. But I feel like people are going to be energized to get out there and really start trying this out. But I also don't want people to be discouraged. You know, is there a good amount of time where you start seeing results from ads? If you have good copy and everything else going for you, you know, should you be looking for results after, you know, a week or a month? Or what do you guys suggest as a good learning period?
Facebook ads, you see the results, I mean, the next, within a couple of days. They're pretty instant. Those results happen. Amazon ads, longer.
Yeah, I would say with Amazon ads, within about a week, you should start to get here. I would say typically with Amazon ads, within a week, you'll start to see sales data come in. I would usually run Amazon ads for about 2 weeks before I would kind of make a judgment call of whether it's a winner or a loser. Okay. Just to give their systems time to catch up because sometimes there's delays. I've had ads go from like horrible negative ROI to like positive ROI overnight because Amazon systems just needed to catch up. So I would say if you're going to run either product display or sponsored ads, start it off low and give it 2 weeks before you have an idea of whether it's something you can play with, you know, and increase.
Now, where do you, you know, as far as your ROI goes, is that something that in the analytics that Amazon gives you, is that something you can see right there? Or are you directly comparing, okay, I spent, you know, $500 and I made $600?
Well, it's what I said before about direct versus indirect. Amazon has a column there called ACOS, stands for average cost of sale. Really, it should be called ROI. That's essentially the column that's telling you how well you're doing versus how well you're spending. And you want it's shown in a percentage, and you want that percentage to be below 100%. Anything over 100% basically means you're spending more than you're making.
Okay.
The indirect ROI is more, once again, for example, my series through various, like, you know, like the data and stuff I've collected, I kind of know that out of every 10 people who start my series, I'd say 5 or 6 will make it to the end of the series. So I can kind of use that to kind of calculate indirect ROI. So because of that, like I have multiple Amazon ads running. One is for a standalone book, and that ACOS basically tells me whether or not this ad should keep running. My first in a series, I have a little more leeway. I can go over 100% because I know that as long as sales are coming in, X number of people are going to make it to the end of the series. So that's kind of more of like, you know, trying to figure out the secret sauce, if you will.
Okay. Okay. You know, and I really I appreciate your patience with explaining this, because, you know, a lot of us, if we haven't delved into advertising yet, it's like, okay, well, you know, it's back to what I said about it being a little overwhelming, you know, even all these numbers are like, holy smokes, you know, what do I do with all this information? So it's really good to, for people like you that have real experience, to kind of spell it out for us so we know where to go with it.
You know, I'll say this. Any of you guys like play video games and stuff?
I do.
All right. Well, you know something? Then you know when you pick up, like, you know, a new game and you're playing that tutorial, you have no friggin' idea what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But like 10 hours into the game, you're a master. Your fingers are just moving.
Yep.
Marketing is no different. Right now, you're in that tutorial phase. Fast forward a little bit when you're doing it. This stuff, then, like, you know, it I won't say it becomes second nature, but it becomes a whole lot clearer. So you really just got to get past that, the marketing tutorial, if you will.
Okay. All right. That's a really good analogy. I like that. Well, Katie, it looks like we're running at an hour right now. Is there anything else you want to chat about tonight?
I don't know. This has been just such good conversation. I can't wait to, like, repeat the episode over and over. So I can
notes
and learn everything.
Yeah, I know I've been kind of all over you guys with questions, but it's just you have so much knowledge, and so many of us don't have that knowledge. We really need to learn from you guys, because there are a lot of great authors out there that I really feel like the world may never know, just because we don't know how the hell to reach people. So,
yeah, I mean, the gone are the days where you can just be an author. I mean, to run this type of business successfully, you really do have to step out of your comfort zone and kind of be a marketer too.
Very true. And, I do want to say how important it is to write a good book. You know, we talk about marketing, write the best book that you can. That's what it comes down to. I mean, to build that solid fan base. I know Rick has a really, really strong one. He writes good books. People love them and they can't wait for the next one. And that's more important, I think, than marketing. So write those good books, and good books that people really kind of like, writing to market almost, you know, what's popular out there. And yeah, that's just as important as marketing.
Oh, that's a topic for another day too. The whole writing what you want versus writing specifically for a market.
Yeah. You're opening a can of worms there. It's going to end you back up on the show again.
Rachel is 100% spot on. It's like, you know, marketing will get you so far. But if the book itself is not good, eventually that will catch up. I mean, I've seen a few authors there, they've put out stuff and they're good marketers. Their book shoots up in the stratosphere. But then after it's been out there for a while, you notice that, like, the reviews start to, like, turn to, like, you know, 2-star, 1-star, because people realize it's not a very good book. And it comes to what I was saying about, like, the funnel. I want people to get into that, you know, that first of the series. And I want them to keep going. It comes down to, I wouldn't get them to keep going if there wasn't something there that, you know, that they didn't find, I guess, worth going forward for. And I have no idea what that is most of the time, but, you know, I guess I get lucky. But yeah, it's a good book will trump that. But, and also, here's the thing, is a good book will also have a very much longer life.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people talk about that 30, 60, 90 day cliff on Amazon, and a good book can live long past that. You know, that's not the end all be all for any novel.
I'll agree with you there. There's a lot of novels that still, you know, they span the test of time and they're still well loved by people. I mean, even you talk about J.K. Rowling. You know, we've talked about the Harry Potter series before. How many years ago was that series out? And people are still discovering it today.
Look on Amazon's urban fantasy genre. Harry Potter is still at the top there. You know, she refreshed it with nude, like, covers and stuff. And I think that's a testament to the fact that the books not only were popular, but they're really damn good books too. You know, compared to some other, like, you know, some other big names that maybe, like, sold, like, millions and millions. But right now, maybe nobody's talking about them anymore.
Yeah, well, I think we can look at indies, too. You know, you've got Hugh Howey, you've got Amanda Hawking. Mm-hmm. They started around the same time, about 2010. They hit the stratosphere with their books. They're still very popular today.
Yeah.
And good books will do that. You know? Mm-hmm. As long as we get people to read them. But after this episode, Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you guys have been absolutely fantastic. I've got to say this has been one of my favorite shows because I think that I have learned more tonight from you two than I have in years of trying to dig through articles and search pages and Facebook groups. So I really appreciate the time and patience that you've given us tonight and being able to teach not only us, but any author or readers even that want to know a little bit more about this world and how to be successful in it.
Well, I'm probably shooting myself in the foot saying this, but I mean, if anybody watches this and has any questions, I'm not offering myself up as like personal mentorship there, but I am happy to answer stuff.
I love
chatting with people.
I'm already drafting my message to you right now in my head. Dear Rick.
Nice. And I'm happy to do the same. Join the group on Facebook that we have. If you want questions, tips or advice on your Facebook ads, post them in the group. The group there is great. They give excellent feedback.
Yeah,
what's the name of your group again, Rachel?
It's the what is it, Katie?
Tips and Tricks? It's the Tips and Tricks. And we'll make sure that in the description below the video, we'll put in the links to the groups that we've mentioned, as well as your personal author links as well, so that people can find you and your books.
Great.
Fantastic. I've only tried an Amazon ad once before, and I was so disappointed in it. And now I realize that there's a hell of a lot more than spending 20 minutes behind my laptop trying to create something. So I'm really looking forward to getting into the groups and learning a little bit more from you guys.
Yeah, I'll offer this as kind of like a cautionary tale. For the most part, you have to probably put in a little bit of time every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They need to be that babysat.
It makes a lot of sense because you have to tweak the ads that aren't working. You have to make sure that your clicks are equating to sales and whatnot. So, yeah, I can see that.
All right. Well, I think we're probably about good to go. Hey, Katie?
I think so, too. Well, you know, Jason's already said thank you, but let me say it again. Thank you both for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you both for teaching us some new tips and tricks on marketing and advertising. It's been so informative, and I think our viewers, too, are going to find this video to be extremely helpful. And I hope with your permission, I'll be able to post it in the Tips and Tricks group once sure. We do go live.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for having me. It was awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much, really.
Awesome. All right. I'm kind of shaking. I'm shaking your hands.
There we go.
There we go.
Oh, my God. That's not my hand.
Oh, no. All right, guys. Well, that does it for this week's episode of Spilling Ink. Come back next week. We'll have more authors to introduce you to and some more tips and tricks for the indie publishing market to talk about. We'll talk to you later. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to Spilling Ink.